Clicking along, we had a pretty good meeting with the Japanese cabinet, and I think they went home reasonably happy. The foreign minister yesterday made it very clear there were no differences between Japan and the United States on Vietnam. He got a direct question from a reporter. He seemed to surprise everybody by saying, just give him a flat no, that there was no difference between Japan and the United States. So that was helpful.
I really leveled with both the foreign minister and the finance minister. And the finance minister said he'd recommend to the prime minister that they go $7 million on this dam and $100,000 on the developmental fund. He didn't know what they'd do it or not. Both of them tried to run away from it. Yeah. But we held their feet to fire pretty well, and I thought their answer was reasonably satisfactory.
He did a good job on the finance minister. He told me last night he was going to do that.
He said that they had a depression on, they couldn't do it now. And I said, well, now, if you won't help yourselves, well, nobody else can help you. And maybe I'm proceeding on the wrong assumption. And I just pulled back in my horns, and he came out of the hole right quick and said, no. What are you giving this Stevenson successor?
Well, I'm working on that this morning. I think we ought to just look right around the entire country. It's quite clear there's no professional we have available for it. No one in the mission up there now. But I think we ought to look at everything from senators right through governors and everybody else, because it is one of the most important appointments that we have. And I'd like to come up with a half a dozen names for you to think about.
All right, now I wouldn't talk to anybody else about it. If I were you, I'd think about it myself. And George is gone. And
George will be back tonight. Yeah.
We ought to give thought to if you were president now, who would be the first three you'd think of this morning to give me something to think about, just to discuss, not to go between us, nobody but us?
Well, right off the bat, I would wonder whether Frank Church is worth considering, but he's got a Republican governor. I think, Mr. President, that here's a case where we're going to have to make a new name and a new figure, rather than just put in somebody who's already made. Now, Arthur Dean is a possibility, but he's getting along in years pretty well. It might not bring the freshness to it that you would want. I even thought overnight of whether Governor Sanders of Georgia would be a man for it, but I'm afraid on certain issues this would not be too happy with 50 or 60 African delegations up there. But he's a kind of clean-cut, intelligent fellow that we're looking for, and a good speaker. George Ball is not an impossibility, although we're terribly missing here. I don't know whether you'd like to think of somebody and sort of grooming him a bit by putting him up there, or if so, I think you'd know more about that than I, and looking down the road here into the future. But that's a very good place to get a man into the public attention and get him before the country and test him and so forth. But I would say that this post is at least as important as any cabinet appointment, and we ought to approach it from that point of view.
Do you know John Gardner of Carnegie?
Yes, I know him very well.
I'm thinking of making him Celebrezze's successor. Now, I want the best man in the nation for that job, because education is just my number one thing, and I want to be remembered for more than anything else is what I do for kids. Now, you have got a background like that. If you were president, would you appoint him, or do you think of somebody else that might be as good or better?
Well, in terms of the inner quality of the job, the thoughtfulness of the job, he'd be very good. I'm not completely sure that as a man of action, that he, in the rough and tumble with the Congress and things of that sort, that he would be ideal. But you're not going to get an ideal man. You ought to think a little of Jim Perkins, president of Cornell, who is much more of an action type fellow than Gardner. Do you know Perkins?
No.
He was vice president under Gardner for many years, and is now president of Cornell, and has acquired additional prestige from that. But you might want to think of him alongside of Gardner. I would settle for Gardner, but I would look pretty hard to see if there's someone who would be better.
He seems very imaginative, and he seems very fresh, and he seems very calm and thorough and imbued with the public interest from my association with him.
Right.
He impresses me.
That's right. He's had
I don't know a thing in the world about him except he's worked on these task forces, and I would say he's really more responsible for my education program, and it is shocking, Dean. We have gone from $600 million to $3.3 billion next year.
Yeah, yeah.
500% increase, and if we get through what this fellow's recommended and what I've submitted, God knows it's going to be the biggest part of our budget except defense, which it ought to be.
Well, one great advantage of Gardner is that he thoroughly understands your program already.
Yes, he does. He's the daddy of it.
Yeah.
He's the architect, and nobody knows that, but
yeah.
I get the credit, but he's done the work.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think that if we had if you had alongside of him an absolutely super man on congressional relations, I don't know how they're presently staffed over there.
Not super, but pretty good. Wilbur Cohen on education and health, and he's undersecretary. And Celebrezze is the most underrated man in this cabinet. He's got less recognition. He's passed more bills of real substance and consequence, and all of them put together, and he never bothers you, never comes in. But he just greases his way through those damn mean congressmen and senators,
right.
Never belly aching, and he's ready to leave, and he has my undying gratitude. I had nothing for him at all, and I came in, but he has done an exceptional job, and I believe his successor, while he'll have to keep up and keep modern, he's got so much running gear out there, there's not much been pushed for the Congress about. It's just now getting appropriations.
Well, if you, let me say that I have tremendous regard for John Gardner. He hasn't had much administrative experience or infighting with the Congress, and if those can be pretty well taken out of the picture, or he can be strongly backstopped on those, then you can't get a more thoughtful or more imaginative or more dedicated man to the purposes of your education program. And that would be recognized all over the country.
I know you're busy. Let me check three or four other things with you. Mansfield wouldn't be interested, would he?
Up in New York?
Yeah.
Well, I'm not sure. I just don't know what Mike thinks of as the end of the trail for him. I personally feel this would be a major step up for him in terms of general public service and esteem, but whether he has something else in mind, I just don't know. I'd rather think that he might be interested in this.
Fulbright wouldn't be.
Fulbright would not be, no.
Would he be insulted to be asked?
No, I don't think so.
I think the man we need is somebody that can have a genuine, deep interest in the poor part of the world, and particularly the Africa-Asia group, and that can just be so strong with them personally as an individual and as a good person and as one that they think is interested in them, that knows their little peculiarity and eccentricities and problems, that he can have some little effect on them that way. And I don't know whether Fulbright could do that with Africa. He's just belligerent every time I suggest a Negro for this education job.
Well, you know, Bill is not really in the great liberal tradition. He's a sort of a maverick.
Yeah.
And you do need a man in a strong liberal tradition up there. Mike Mansfield, I think, would be somewhat better, although he'll be a little astringent. I think the reason I thought of Frank Church is that he could be made into an Adlai Stevenson by growing on the job. And he'd start off with, I think, a very good presence and a very good speaking capability. I wouldn't think of others there on that committee, like Case or Claiborne Pell or fellows like that. I think they're just not up to it. But I think Church may have some of the makings in it, but unfortunately his governor's a Republican.
You think Case of New Jersey might offer some possibility? He's a pretty able fellow.
Yes, I think that we should look on both sides of the aisle.
He's pretty liberal.
Yeah.
Hicken, Looper, and Aiken wouldn't, but Case might not be bad. What about Cooper?
I think Cooper doesn't. Cooper was a very good ambassador in India, one of the best, but he doesn't have the.
A little too reticent.
The flesh, that's right. He needs to be more open and outgoing for that job up there.
Now, if you lost George Ball, who would you think of as your undersecretary outside the department?
Gee, I really haven't settled down to that one.
That's something you better be thinking about.
Yeah, let me think about it. Let me think about it. I think it would have to be outside the department.
Yes, I think that's right. But I've been giving a little thought. Do you think George Ball would consider it an upgrading?
Oh, I think so. And after all, no one steps down to occupy a post that Adlai Stevenson occupied.
What about Bola? What about Bruce? What about McGee?
I don't think, McGee's a possibility. McGee's a possibility. And a real one. Bolin, I think, is too much European. He has...
What are we going to do with him? I don't want him coming back here and raising hell with Miss Schlesinger. But he's not a Johnson man, and he's really not... he's just not cut to my cloth, and he doesn't help me with his conversations with people. Now, what do we do about that?
Well, we can move him to another place and... before too long. He's been there quite a while now.
Well, we ought to think about who is real outstanding there. We want real quality, but we got to think more of that. Now, I've got a man I haven't suggested, but I think is one of the most exceptional men I know. And I don't know whether you've had that close contact with him. And he's not a Johnson man. He's just a citizen of the country. I think that... I think he has a good many of the qualities that you have, plus one or two you don't have. I think that he can cut a throat and kind of smile, and I don't think you like to do that. And that's Clifford.
Oh, heavens. I tell you, I'd be delighted to get Clark Clifford, for example.
Now, I thought if George Ball went up there that we could might put Clifford in as undersecretary.
Sure.
I thought if Clifford could do either one of those places.
Sure.
Now, the question would be which one, where would give us the strongest team for you and for me.
As you know, I was hoping that Clifford might take the NATO job. No, I'm very strong for Clark Clifford.
Clifford is not much for the ambassador, and he doesn't want to be ambassador to Paris or anything. But he did say one time that if the time came where he could be Undersecretary of Defense or Undersecretary of State, that both of them had his consuming interest since he was an aide to Truman, and that while he had not had the chance to continue that much in his private practice, that he had interest in that field. Now, he's not interested in any cabinet post. He's not really interested in any fame. He's interested in something that challenges him, that he feels like he's producing on. He's got lots of money. He's got an attractive wife. He's got an attractive family. I believe he'd just sit down with the ambassador of Malawi and really court him and have this fellow walking on air. And I think he'd do it 120 times in 240 days with each country.
Yeah.
And I don't believe anybody'd know what he was doing it too much. And I believe he'd come up with the results. He takes John Williams, the meanest man in the Senate, and Harry Byrd, the stubbornest man in the Senate, and Paul Douglas, the most liberal man in the Senate. He puts them all together, and nobody knows how he's done it, and he's out home sleep when the results announced.
Right.
Now, I think we have to think of him as undersecretary for Ball. I felt that Ball was a good man, and I believe he's been loyal to me, and I think he's loyal to his country, wants to do a good job, and I rather like his willingness to be a little independent and and say to me, well, now, wait a minute, I don't want to give you the devil's side of it. And I also have a feeling he might be a little bull in a china shop and run over him a little bit if he needed to, be a little autocratic, and I don't like those qualities in anybody, including myself, and I have them.
I'll tell you, Mr. President, there's one thing that only you should know, and that is that I think we could come to a point later in the fall on the Vietnam where George's own views on the matter would make him rather uncomfortable. This hasn't been just the devil's advocate's point of view, but... there's no problem. There's no problem for quite a long time to come, but we could reach such a point. Now, I can tell you straight away. I'm Ray. Ray.